Hello and welcome back to the German New Medicine Podcast. I am Dr. Melissa Sell, and today I'm going to be sharing an interview with a woman named Kelly, who's got some great stories to share, great case examples of conflicts and symptoms that she experienced and how she worked through it and became aware of the root conflict behind it. There are a couple of audio glitches in the connection due to our Zoom connection that we had, but it will smooth out. So if you just wait a moment, there'll be a little bit of a pause and you should be able to hear everything in the interview. I am excited for you guys to hear this one. All right. Well, we are here with Kelly, mother of six, and she sent me an email of a really great granola story with a conflict and some symptoms. And so I asked her if she would be interested in having a chat. And so today we're going to chat about the granola and some other wonderful insights she's had related to her conflicts and symptoms. And so Kelly, welcome. And thank you so much for being open to sharing your experience.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And my little guy. So I'm relatively new to GNM. I think I've been investigating it for about a year now. And when I first ran across it, watching your videos and trying to kind of get a grasp, because it is so different from how we are raised with that paradigm. But I knew so much of what we've been taught recently in my recent unfoldings of trying to figure out the world, that so much was didn't make a sense anymore. Like, well, maybe this does. And it was so appealing, but I had a challenging time figuring out how to apply it to my life. Well, lo and behold, soon after he was born, I decided to start making homemade granola, our big family. And oh my gosh, it's so delicious. And it is so hard to stop eating it. So I would eat bowl full of but then I was just plagued with this terrible indigestion and absolutely horrific gas. Like, someone probably should have died. And it was just so embarrassing. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I started investigating, okay, well, what is it that I'm eating? Oh, the granola is a new thing. That's just so weird. So I thought, you know what, maybe it's the raisins. Because I've had problems with eating grapes later in the day. Maybe that's it. Anyway, so I tried to do the elimination thing. Nope, that wasn't the reasons. What could it be? Well, I just have to stop eating granola, apparently. And I was just like, that shouldn't be. You shouldn't just have to stop eating something so delicious like granola. So then I thought, okay, well, let me investigate from the GNM perspective. What could this possibly be? And as I began thinking on it, I thought, well, maybe this has to do with, I was thinking of earlier childhood trauma or something. And like, well, we didn't eat granola growing up, really. So that's not it. And then I recalled in my early adult life, I had some turmoil and I thought, oh, maybe that was it. Cause I was eating that granola. Like, oh, it wasn't granola. It was a granola like cereal, but I was eating it religiously. And so I thought, well, maybe that's it. But I couldn't really land on anything. And I remember hearing someone say, you just have to let it sit and whatever starts surfacing, pay attention. I thought, okay, so I'll give that a whirl. So by this time, it had been about a month since I had stopped eating granola. And my daughter was asking if we could please have some more. And so I made some and I thought, gosh darn it all. I want to eat this. I want to figure this out. So all of a sudden, what started coming up in my mind was something I had no, it didn't relate to granola, in my opinion. What was something really conflicting that occurred during the time when I knew I was eating it frequently? And the thing that kept coming back was my husband had been deployed to Iraq, and he was in the army, and he was gone for a year. He was 3 days away from coming home. They'd already packed up all their gear. They were in transition. They were just about to get the flight to come stateside. So exciting, because we were newly married. And I got a phone call or an email. I got the news that he was being redeployed. They were turning them around and sending them back with no estimated date of coming home. It, in that moment, it felt like he had died. It was absolutely crushing. And now I do not remember holding a bowl of granola and being mid-bite and getting the news and going, oh, but that's the memory that kept coming up. And I thought, well, that just seems really weird, but you know what? I want to eat this granola really bad, so I'm going to try it. So I sat down with this bowl of granola in the evening, and I started lifting my spoon. And honestly, I was so nervous. I was so nervous to try this out and that it would still, that it would fail. But I just gave it my best. I remember hearing, you should talk to yourself like you're talking to your best friend. So I start, hey, you know, okay. He's not going anywhere. He is not redeploying. This has been years. It's fine. It is okay. Life is stable. You are safe. And I'm eating. And I'm waiting. And I'm nervous. And I'm like, no. One must not be nervous. One must calm oneself. And I'm eating. And it's feeling okay. I start to get a little bit of a grumble. And I'm like, no. It's calm. You are safe. He is not going anywhere. I finished the bowl and I waited. And that night, there was no explosions of gas internally. And so, you know, I couldn't believe it. I felt fine. And then so the next day around lunchtime, after lunch, I had another bowl. I couldn't wait to try it out again. And I talked to myself and calmly and that everything was fine. I was secure. He was here. He wasn't going to go anywhere. And then I did the same. I had one for dessert. And I could not believe that it worked. And I thought, you know what? I think this might just be that for some reason my system has a hard time with granola. I know some people are of the camp that oats are just really bad for you, especially when they're baked, and granola is just the worst. And so it might be that I'm simply calming my system to be able to change how my body reacts to it. But maybe it doesn't have anything to do with the story. Maybe it doesn't. But then I had a great, then I had a relapse, because about maybe 3 weeks after I had done this and had conquered granola, which I was so excited about, I had also conquered grapes. That was another thing that I had had a memory when my parents were in mid-divorce and I was like 4 years old. I remember my mom had grapes in the fridge, and that was something sacred around grapes. And she used to use it as her sweet treat when she was dieting, and all these, I don't know, there was a whole lot that was packed into grapes for me. And I hadn't been able to eat grapes before. I could eat them until noon, but for some reason after noon in the evening, they gave me terrible gas as well. And, you know, I've always hated the term Smelly Kelly, the nickname, but it is very true. So then, I thought, you know what? This worked for granola. I'm going to try it on grapes. It worked for grapes. I was totally sold. And then my husband says, you know, I was looking at this job that it's with a railroad station. The railroad. And it's an on-call job, but pays really well. The thing is that it's on-call year round. And I would have 2 hours notice to get to work. And then I'd be gone for like 4 or 5 days in a row. And internally, I just went, oh my gosh. And then told him, oh, you know, whatever you got to do. And yeah, I could soldier through that. I couldn't eat granola. The conflict came back again. And I could not. And I seriously was eating the granola. And all of a sudden, my intestines started going again. And I said, you kidding? I can't believe that. No. But I could not honestly tell myself, it's okay. He's not going. I had to come up with a new story to tell myself. And honestly, I just wasn't okay with it. So I had to have a conversation with him and say, babe, I'm obviously, my body is telling me I'm not okay with you being on call and not having a stable home life. That just doesn't sit with me at all. And I have to tell you how I feel. Now, granted, the next level of emotional maturity would be to get to a place where I would be fine if he's not here. But at the moment, that's not where I want to live. I want to live with him. But it's not the thing about GNM and watching your videos and how I really love how you and Steve talk when you have, when you've had some of your past videos, and hearing how aware we get to be and choosing awareness, because that is not how we live our lives. We live our lives blissfully, you know, having our minds in deep in social media, and we just live on autopilot and we distract ourselves so much that this makes you be responsible for yourself and for how you're feeling and for your health. As a family, we've been pretty good about the kind of the foods that we eat, or knowing, at least knowing what's healthy and trying to live generally along those lines. But as far as emotional health, that is, and mental health in that aspect too, that's really new to say, yeah, you know what? Everything's connected. So if you want this to be healthy, you got to get this healthy, and you have to know that you are in charge of doing that. My husband and I were just having a conversation yesterday about, he's exploring some new dietary nutritional things, and I'm exploring GNM, and it's quite funny when we get together and talk about our two things. But when I told him how, like, really, it's so cool, because you have to be intentional and responsible to be able to keep yourself in health or to heal yourself. And he said, that's just too much thinking. I think that's how most people feel. But I love this power that's giving me. I actually recently had a dream, and I believe it was in reaction to feeling so empowered, where I was learning how to fly, and I was flying around the house, and I said, Brian, my husband, look, I'm flying. He goes, no, you're not. I said, okay. So I did it in the room he was in, and I started just floating off and flying around. I said, see, man, if we've always been able to fly and they didn't tell us this, what else are they hiding? For me, that's how I felt about GNM. Like, as you've said so many times, like, if this information is so powerful and so game-changing, and once we can understand it, and as a mom of six, it has been crazy how I have seen this stuff unfold, direct reaction with my children, going, oh my gosh, you know what? We had, my husband and I had an argument. The kids were kind of unsettled. This child heard more of the argument than anybody else. That kid got laid out after peace was made and everything was fine. She just had a whole day where she just was dead to the world. And, you know, it was just phenomenal. It's like, this child doesn't get sick. What has happened in the argument? That's the only thing about unrest in the family. And now she's fine. But to help my through their phases, to be able to say, you have a symptom. And instead of saying, oh, you're sick, because that's how we've couched it always, say, your body's healing. So just take it easy. It's a good thing. Isn't it so cool how it can do that? And to help remove the fear around it, and just to then try to help comfort them through their symptoms of healing.
Oh my goodness. That's the vision, you know, a mom of six young people who can, you know, who you have personal experience and you're seeing it. And it's just so, and that's the thing, it's natural biological law. It becomes so obvious when you put those pieces together to raise this next generation with this sacred wisdom. Mm-hmm. So they never will have to be afraid of, you know, disease and cancer and a sniffle or a tummy ache. It's like, no, this makes perfect sense. Like, I just love too the, you know, the specific adaptation of, you know, this gas, this indigestible morsel conflict, because, you know, even when we look at like the dynamics of that situation, you know, it's like you had already taken it in your mouth, swallowed down the fact that he was coming home. And it was like, you know, it's like when we get down to the intestines where we have like rumbles and, you know, gas in the intestines, that means it was like already, you had already digested it in your mind. Like you'd already chewed it up and swallowed it. And it's like got all the way down there. And it's like, oh no, actually he's not. And this is one of the phrases that I love when describing like the indigestible morsel conflict, is feeling like someone stole the butter from your bread, like this sense of deprivation, like you had it, he was coming home, like your husband, he was coming home, and then he was snatched away from you. And that's like, you know, why the symptom manifested. And then what you did when you talked through it to yourself, you know, a conflict is resolved, so we can settle and get rid of the track if you are confident that it's not going to happen again. And at the time you were, you're like, he's here, he's not going away again, like we're safe, like I don't need to worry about him kind of like leaving on a moment's or like not being here. And that's what allowed your body to be able to turn off the track, to deactivate the program, and, you know, easily process and digest the granola without having any upset. But then as soon as, you know, you get this potential that he could be, you know, snatched away from you at a moment's notice and gone for an indefinite period of time. And it's like, oh, there's my morsel. I need the morsel's your husband and you want him, you know, with you. And so that, I just love the, you know, the whole story, because it just illustrates for a person, it's like, okay, there's something in your life that was like that for you. You know, it could have been money. It could have been some other, you know, situation that you could not digest, something that was, you know, taken, snatched away from you when you were expecting it. And so to look for that theme, I think, is such a powerful testimonial and story for people to hear. So that is super cool. I also wanted to ask you, and you shared a little bit with me about like the stiff neck story, because that one, I was like, oh my goodness, when you told me.
Oh my gosh. that thing. So I've, since childhood, I've always had problems with my neck and my upper back. And then even when I was about 8 or so, went to the chiropractor because this was bothering me so much. And no, it wasn't even a chiropractor. It was some conventional spine doctor, whatever they're called, osteo something. And they said that I had scoliosis, which I hadn't shared with you. And so in this period of time, when I was in third grade, I missed 25% of my days in school. My teacher was math and science oriented, and I learned, I told myself, I accepted the messaging that particular year that I was terrible at math and science. I hated it. I was just really bad. And I hated going to school. And so I developed stomach aches, and I would find any kind of little twinge that I would get in my stomach and say, oh, I'm sick, I can't go to school. My parents took me to specialists, and I was on different diets and all sorts of things to try to help me feel better. At the same time, both my parents were working. My sister and I were latchkey kids. It was pretty apparent that I just want to be, I don't want to go to school. And I didn't want my mom being gone all the time. We felt fairly abandoned. So one day in that school year, I woke up with stiff neck. I could not move it at all. I couldn't move right or left. I was stuck stiff in bed for hours. And I recall the time when I was able to actually start moving again. It was right around when school got out. So kind of like, that's not funny. And so as I was trying to identify now, just a couple weeks ago, trying to identify, okay, so what was it that started this, all this tension? Because I would love to get rid of it. And again, I was trying to, I thought maybe it had to do with some earlier childhood trauma. And so when I'm chewing on this for a couple weeks, and finally, when I just really had no clue, I was laying down to go to bed. And I just said, okay, please reveal what the origin of the neck issue is. And as I was in half waking states, feeding the baby through the night, all of a sudden I saw my third grade classroom crystal clear. I was sitting at my desk, and I've never been able to visualize a classroom like this before. And we were taking a test. I think it was probably a spelling test. And I could not, because you know, you're told you can't look at your partner, so you can't look left, you can't look right, you have to look straight ahead. And I remember sitting in that, I had all that visceral feeling of being in that classroom and being paralyzed because I didn't know the answer. I felt so dumb, and I couldn't look anywhere to find the answer. I was going to fail, and I could not handle that feeling of failure. It was such an epiphany when I got up and went, oh my gosh. And then looking at learninggnm.com and trying to find, okay, so neck, oh my gosh, that's intellectual devaluation, that's the word. And it all started clicking for me. And so I am in the midst of dealing with this, but that day, that evening when my husband came home from work and we had dinner and we had some quiet time, as the kids were playing, I said, I gotta tell you. So this is what I found out. And as I started telling him about it, and the reason that this was so important to me is that I had lately been feeling basically symptoms of carpal tunnel in my hands. So horrifically, I would have to get out of bed at night and I'd have to try to massage the back part of my, under my shoulder blades, just press it up against a protruding corner of the wall to try to find some relief. And it was chronic. And I thought, I have to figure this thing out. So and the thing that was so scary to me I felt like I was on the balance beam negotiating the emotions that came up with identifying what was actually happening in my hands. Because when you get, as you've said before, when you get a diagnosis, that can be a conflict shock all on its own. My maternal side has been plagued with arthritis and carpal tunnel. And when I started to think, oh no, not me too. This is, oh no, genetic disposition to have, you know, arthritis and whatnot. And I'm 43 and I'm totally half my life and I'm not going to be able to use my hand. My aunt had surgery in both her hands. And just like all of the women on that side of the family have arthritis. But knowing what I know so far, like, you know what? This is not going to be my life. This is not going to be my story. And I don't want this. And I'm going to solve it. So then when I had that, that's why it was so important for me to find kind of that origin point. And then as I started telling my husband about all this revelation that I had, I felt this layer of tension and the tingling in my hands just melt away. It felt like a layer had come off just in being able to identify it and have hope. And that is such a big thing. I just listened to one of your guys' videos today where you were talking about when people receive a diagnosis and how your choice of how you react to it. If you say, oh, that's interesting. Now I have a course of action that I feel really confident that this is going to work. I'm going to choose this direction to address my symptoms. And how powerful that is, as opposed to, well, this is the direction I think I'm supposed to go in because everyone said so, but I really think I should be doing something else, and how I'm not going to have the same healing effect. And that just blows my mind about how integral our thought process to our entire health. It's just crazy.
Amazing. I just, the description, and I love that you're just like, okay, show it to me. And that's, you know, when people are struggling, like, ooh, what is it? You know, you can't kind of like go hunting for it. You just kind of have to let it. It's like, you're like, all the answers that you need, that moment in time when the shock, you know, when that signature was impressed upon your subconscious in that moment, it's all there. And so if you can just kind of cultivate this aha moment, you know, just by being open to it. I want to see this. I have a sincere desire to eat this granola. I really want to figure this out because I'm realizing that this is connected to something. Show it to me. And then you get into, I mean, that perfect, like, mid-waking state, like in the night, like, you know, feeding the baby, it's like, ooh, that's that, you know, that deep kind of subconscious zone, and boom, crystal clear right in front of you, the third grade classroom, and that description of, so it was both like intellectual self-devaluation. So the neck, like, I don't know this, I'm going to fail. And that's terrible. And then also the stuckness. So that's like a motor conflict of, I can't look to the right or to the left. So we've got, you know, that double conflict. Mm. Self-devaluation and stuckness. And yeah, and that is just, you know, probably a track that you step on from time to time of like feeling, you know, not smart enough or devalued in some way. And so now by having the awareness, by putting these dots together and by talking about it, that was really beautiful too, sharing about how, you know, telling your husband about it, that gets you out of the isolation. Because when you're in third grade and your mom's busy, mm. your dad's busy, and you're in school and you just want to do a good job, you know, one of the hallmarks of of a conflict shock is isolation. It's feeling all alone with this problem. And that's why when we talk about it, you know, and talking to your kids and kind of, you know, sharing things and, you know, getting it off your chest, even it just helps to bring that layer of resolution and okayness, and we can work with this and we can deal with this. You know, same thing with like reframing a diagnosis. Ooh, now I know what I can work with. And this is good information. I can do something with this rather than a pronouncement of something scary and bad. It's like, now I have, you know, it's all about how am I choosing to interpret this? Am I using it in a way that's freaking me out or that's calming me down? And we want to lean into that relief and I'm on the path. And even if I haven't figured it all out yet, even if there's still tracks, even if I still have symptoms sometimes, like, that's okay. I can work with that. I can learn from every reminder. Every track is an opportunity to learn something more about myself, more about how this conflict is kind of intertwined with my identity. And the more that I can see it and realize this is the conflict, this is who I really am. You know, I don't have to see life through that lens any longer. It's like, oh, that's how we get there. And so that is just such an amazing, another just beautiful example of how this works, you know, and even if it isn't gone completely or if it has the capacity to come back, we don't use it as a reason to feel bad. We say, okay, there's just a little more to this.
And with that, two things that came up. One was about self-evaluation. I mean, that's, I think everybody has a problem with that. Yes. For the most part, it is a rarity to find someone who is just so darn confident that they have no issues in that realm. And it just occurred to me today, like, how do I tell myself? How do I tell myself I'm not dumb? Because there's plenty of times where I make mistakes and I go, well, that was dumb. I mean, you can't argue with it. That was dumb. That was not a good choice. And I said, well, like, I know I'm not stupid. Just like I know I'm not a vampire. And so, like, if someone said, you're a vampire, it's like, well, obviously I'm not. So if someone, you know, if I tell myself I'm so stupid, like, well, obviously I'm not. I mean, we can all make choices that are nonsensical, but it doesn't mean I'm stupid. And so with that, next time now I start to feel that, so stupid. Like, you know what? I'm not a vampire. I'm not stupid. Got it. Cool. So, but then the other one, in talking about diagnoses and those, that place of being able to have that freedom to reframe a diagnosis, I have been scared to death of dying of cancer early because my dad died. He had to our knowledge, it was 4 years that he did all the conventional things with his cancer diagnosis, and he passed away at the age of 46. And then one of my paternal cousins, he passed away from about a 3-year battle with cancer at 37. And I just seeing all these people, grandparents, aunts, and dealing with cancer, and they're all related. They're not just by marriage, and seeing, oh my gosh, this is my destiny. Look at all these other people in my family who are dying of cancer. And or have, you know, just their health is totally wrecked because of it. And I was just so afraid of getting it. And I was convinced we had a fertility journey. It sounds so funny. I mean, you have 6 kids, like, really, you struggle with fertility, huh? But the first, how many kids? The first 5 kids, super easy to get pregnant. Just had to look at each other and we had a baby. But then I experienced my first miscarriages. And it was absolutely devastating, And I was so angry at my body and my reproductive system. And I was convinced that I had some kind of ovarian cancer, because that was also something that ran in my maternal side of having reproductive issues. And my husband just was not okay with me going to get, you know, looked at, checked out, you know, scans done. And I respected that. And I thought, well, honestly, because the question was, well, what are you going to do if they find something? Are you really going to let them cut that stuff out of you or open you up? And it's like, well, no. So why? But I still had that sense of worry. And it wasn't until it's about 2 years into that fertility journey. And I was taking all the different kinds of supplements. I was changing my diet and doing all these things. And I still had so much anxiety around it. And then finally, I was listening to something that was talking about, oh, your liver chi and how to release it. It was basically just relax, just chill the heck out. And so I started trying to laugh for a minute every morning. And I was like, okay, this is after this cycle, start of a new cycle. I'm just going to try to be as joyful as possible and happy and just get in a really good mental place. Bam, baby. So it was just an amazing thing. And that's not to say, I mean, it could, you don't know exactly all the factors, but that is the massive one thing that did change. And so just like you were saying, of allowing yourself to be in a positive mental space to, instead of like, oh stupid body, keep messing up and you, and then just go, you know what? I love you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being taking care of all of my systems. And I trust and believe that the right thing will happen. And yeah, so that's just another example.
Exactly. And that's the fifth biological law, is that there, everything the body does is purposeful and meaningful, and that there's nature yeah. does what mm-hmm. is logical. And so even in the sense, and that's where, you know, we look at, you know, cancers or miscarriage or things, it's like, oh, but this seems like something wrong that's happening. We have to zoom out and mm-hmm. look at the greater context, you know? So there must have been, you know, for a miscarriage to happen, there must have been a stress or a shock that happened, you know, that caused constriction of blood vessels to the womb. And it wasn't going to, you know, complete this pregnancy, and the body just knew it, and the body knew what to do. And as heartbreaking and, you know, that mm-hmm. as that is, there is that acceptance of nature did what made sense. And so even in, you know, when there's a cancer, it's like, that means that you were in a conflict for a really long time and it's not resolved, or it's either you're hanging in the conflict or hanging in the healing. And so that is, you know, even though the outcome or what we're dealing with is difficult, there is a purpose and there is a meaning. And if we can kind of be available for learning about ourselves, about our experiences, about where, you know, whatever it is that we need to learn through the experience, that if we can accept that and make the changes, you know, we can see amazing things happen. And often, you know, with cancer, especially, it's such a deeply ingrained pattern of fear and of whatever led mm-hmm. to adaptation to begin with, you know. And so being free from that, because I used to have the same thing. I had an aunt that had breast cancer and a grandmother that died of breast cancer. And it was just like programmed. Ooh, bah, you got to watch out. It could just hit you out of nowhere.
Yeah. But
understanding now that it's like, there's a specific reason that it begins. It's a specific adaptation. And, you know, it makes sense if you understand the person's life experience. And so we no longer have to live in that fear. We live in understanding and we live in awareness, and we pay attention to when we're conflicted and losing sleep. And we address it as quickly as possible, because that's the thing, is this, like every biological program, there's like a time limit, like the body, you know, the tissues are adapting. And so we don't want them to be in that adaptive phase for a very, very, very long time, because that can lead to all sorts of, you know, things that get diagnosed. And then you're in that whole, you know, loop of mm-hmm. if you are like, are you going to follow the protocols, or are you going to be divided between what the medical system says, what your family says, what you think, what you know deep down, you know, because as soon as you're in that tug of war, it becomes, again, just another difficulty to work through. And depending on how rooted you are in the knowledge and in the understanding of what your body's doing, it's a personal thing. Like, no one can give it to you. No one can say, oh, it's just an adaptation. Your body, you know, is doing exactly. If you don't know that for yourself and you haven't kind of gone through and connected those dots, you know, it's a huge life struggle to figure out, what do I believe about this? You know, because some people actually, if they mm-hmm. believe in the conventional system, they can get, you know, they can get a good outcome by doing that, because they're so like sold on it. So there is such a huge power of like, what is it that you believe? And if you're torn, it does become so much more difficult. So I love that, you know, so since learning this, has your fear of cancer, has that softened? Has that gone away?
Oh, so much, so much. And honestly, it was because of what you had shared in another video of saying, you know, I know for a fact that I've had cervical cancer and something else. And the power of being able to say, you know what, I may have had it, I may actively have something, but it doesn't have, the power of it has really dissolved, which is life changing. As you were talking about cancer and you know, going to the doc, getting a diagnosis and whatnot, I know, just as a child, I mean, I was a teen when my dad was diagnosed, what that did to our entire family. Like, hell no, I'm not going to, I am, there's no reason to go to a doctor for a diagnosis of something that I know that I can help work myself through, and only I can do it, because I'm not going to do anything that a conventional allopathic way would recommend by any means. They have it totally upside down. And so to save my children and my family and myself, that shock and that fear, and no, I'm not going to do that to my kids. and I don't have to be, I don't have to be afraid. And I love being able to share this with my kids. My poor kids, they hear so much of mommy's thought process. But I mean, that's how we are unschoolers, and life is our school. And so these conversations to me are so much, they're not going to learn anything close to this in public school, in my opinion. And so it's super valuable to have this, to have them hear me connect the dots and say, oh, you know what? You know why you have that? I think I know why you have that cold. Tell me what you think about it. And let's try to figure this out. And guess what? You know, this is the end. This is the healing phase. So why don't you just relax? Why don't you grab a book? Why don't you get some water? Why don't you go take a bath and just enjoy healing? I know for me, being able to identify, so I have to go back to this argument. I've never been so delighted to share about an argument I had with my husband, but we just recently had a conflict together, and we didn't have immediate resolution. Everybody needed some space to just kind of figure out what to do next. And so it was a couple days. And so finally, I guess it was probably day two or so, things started to, like, I could tell, okay, we're talking again. Things are moving forward. We're progressing. Okay, we're going to get back to a state where all is well. I immediately had a sore throat for 5 minutes. And then I know exactly what that's from. And before, if someone else had shared that story, I went, oh, whatever. But no, being able to connect the dots. And then it was earlier that morning, I woke up and I'd had a blemish on my right cheek, which I don't have acne issues anymore, but all of a sudden it's because I felt like I had a slap in the face and emotionally. And I looked at it, and instead of going, oh crap, are you kidding me? Acne now, what? I went, oh, I know where that's from. It's gonna get better, it's just fine. And it did, it lasted like half a day and it went away, which is just kind of bizarre. But just having these little things, and then like the next day after, we had some really good reconnect time, and then I had a sore throat, or it wasn't a throat. I was congested, and it was just beautiful to go, oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad my body is healing. Hey, body, I'm sorry you had to go through that conflict. We'll keep learning on how to be more resilient. But it was just beautiful to see all those. And then two of my kids had sore throats, like all right after, as the family was just kind of coming down, getting reconnected again. And it was beautiful to be like, oh, yay, they're sick. But then also to see the power as a parent, to see how incredibly powerful our relationship as a husband and wife is to the overall health of our children, and how they feel about the stability that they're in. And we don't get a pass on being, you know, having eruptive confrontations with each other. We being able to see those symptoms follow up, the healing symptoms, and go, wow, I didn't really know that it affected them so much. How can I help to minimize that for them, so that they feel more stable, so that they feel safer, and that they're not having to absorb all that negativity or that uncertainty as well. So it's just, again, it's teaching us more self-responsibility, and it can feel a little bit daunting. Again, how my husband said, that just sounds like a lot of work. Yeah, but you're totally in control of it. And that's what I love, what you guys teach and what you teach, Melissa, is how you get to, how do you want to frame your life? How do you want to frame your circumstances? How do you want to react to things? And let's help give you guys a better way to see what it's like to be you. Love that.
Totally. Oh, so, and it is, I know, like, who's ever been excited about a pimple, about a sore throat, about a stuffed nose? It's like, no, I'm seeing all of the layers of the nuance of that experience of, you know, I felt attacked, slapped in the face. I felt like this, you know, this stinks. I can't swallow this. It's like, oh, all the little just like flavors of the experience. My biology adapted perfectly to that. And as we chill out, the symptoms come on and we, you know, we see it come and we see it go. And that's the thing is the shorter the conflict, the shorter the healing phase. And you see it, it just kind of pops up and goes away. And you see it kind of goes and went through the family, you know, and another family would say, oh, we caught a bug and a bug came through our family and everybody got, you know, a sore throat. And that's the thing is like, yes, everyone in the family is affected to some degree, but that has to do with their, you know, involvement with the conflict. They're, like you said, the child that witnessed the most of the conflict has the, you know, the greatest symptoms. What is it that accounts for the variability in the symptom expression? It's the conflict and how intense it was for that individual. And of course, like the family is just sharing this energy all day long. And we're looking and, you know, mom's facial expressions, dad is, you know, we're feeling into what's happening. And even if we don't hear any of it, we feel it. And so we can have these conflicts. And then once we relax and we go through the healing. And so, yeah, so your family isn't going to be under the spell of the idea of a contagion or this bug, this invisible something that comes in that we have no control over. And that's the scariest thing about the idea of the invisible germs. It's like, we have no control, but here, like you said, it's like, I can get better at this. All right. So now I see how this has affected everyone. And now I just take, you know, more awareness, more personal responsibility, more creativity in how we navigate disagreements, difficult life situations, because that's going to happen. That's part of life, is to experience things and to, you know, find a creative solution, overcome it as a family. And if we can do that, you know, a little more swiftly, a little more elegantly the next time, all the better, you know, but it's not that the symptoms are bad. It's not that the symptoms are wrong. The symptoms are perfect. They make perfect sense, but giving yourself and your kids just that frame, my body's healing, my body's doing the right thing, we all resolve something, and that's a good thing. You know, I appreciate you so much just kind of like diving into all of this and, you know, putting it into practice and giving us this beautiful example of a mother of six children. Like, that is just incredible, you know, that you are just a testament to this is, you know, this is how biology works. This is how, you know, to help children, to raise them in this way. So thank you for modeling that for all of us.
Oh, my delight. Thank you so much for everything that you make available and for helping to teach us through this.
Oh, well, you are so welcome. Are there any other nuggets you want to share? Any other examples or, you know, pieces of advice for mothers out there?
Yes, there's one thing. This is another mama story. So we have before, gosh, I was a full-time working mama. I worked from home, but I still was, my office door was closed and mommy had working hours and I often was away. And I had just had, it was after our fourth child, Truly, when she was born, she was so clingy. Can you believe it? A baby wanting their mommy. Whoa. And my poor husband, my poor child, when I was gone, I was a photographer and would shoot weddings and I'd be gone all day, all night. And he would have to try to soothe her, but she would not soothe. So of course we were at that time, we were of the camp of self-soothing is the thing to do. The poor thing would cry for just ever. But I wasn't home to help with that. And you know, well, she just got to cry it out. Well, lately, well, it's not even lately, the past couple of years, she's now six. As she would have to go to sleep, it was always at bedtime. She would say, oh, I've got this. My nose hurts. My eye hurts or some part of her, like I'm itchy. I need, like, huh, I'm itchy. Interesting. Something she would have, some kind of a thing that bothered her and that she just, even though it's like, girl, it is nighttime. It's almost 10 o'clock. Go to bed. That's just enough. So I had a light bulb of going, oh, I know what it is. She needs mama. I mean, you probably have a much more in-depth version, but there's that separation anxiety of being away, of not having that I'm attached to mama when I need to be attached. I had recently read the Continuum Concept book where they're just talking about the need for a child to be connected to the mama for the at least the first year until they're at developmentally ready to test out their own independence. She did not have that opportunity. And so being able to see where she's coming, where that is coming from, and instead of saying, oh, you're just trying to stay up late, or you're just being whiny for no reason, really investigate it and say, how can I give you what you need? And I'm so, so sorry that, you know, I was doing the best I could with the information I had at the time, but now I have better information and I want to help you feel secure, that you don't have to feel like you have to come up with something else to cling to mommy, and that mommy will just have that attention for you there. Let's give it attention beforehand. And, you know, so that these symptoms that you keep having can just go away and you could peaceful night's sleep and not be so worried about security. Ugh. So that's another thing of just being able to listen to your kids and really see, like, what is that about? So oftentimes it comes, as a parent, it comes across as that they're just bugging you and they're coming up with something to whine about. And no, actually, let's look a little deeper and let's be a little more gracious. I think, I mean, we moved and I'm no longer a photographer, and I basically have, I ran away basically. It was wonderful. We moved to Iowa from Texas and I changed my phone number. I changed my email. Like, nobody can contact me at all. And it just, this was a place of rest, and I had a point. Uh-huh. But gosh. Yep. I think it's the mom brain. It just seeped away. I can't remember exactly what I was on about, but I'm sure it was good.
I'm sure that it was. Well, I mean, just that example too of, like, you know, changing the way that you orient. It's like, okay, the photography took me away from my kids and made it so that, you know, that I, you know, did the cry it out or whatever. It's like, let her self-soothe. And now yeah. that like yeah. you kind of reoriented, it sounds like your life more around, you know, supporting the type of parenting that you'd like to do.
You nailed it. Thank you so much for helping me find my way back. And that is so true, that we live in such, my point was that previously we had just the typical go, go, go lifestyle. And in moving here and having just really getting to start life over from scratch of how is it that we want to live? And I mean, so much so that we're a car-free family, we urban homestead, we just, there's nobody has to rush off anywhere except my husband. Yes, good work. But even for the most part, the way that we structure our lives is, how do we want to experience being human? Instead of what is the script I have to follow, because that's what success looks like. That's what being responsible. I mean, not that we're irresponsible, but, you know, in the whole of no, you got to climb some ladders and you've got to, you know, do these things and you have to earn X amount in your income to be happy. Like, oh, that's bullshit. That's not true at all. And so the more that we have simplified our lives and the more space that we can create and the less rush around, especially around children. Oh my gosh, I hated having to be rushed here and there and oh, you're late for school. Hurry up. And there's only maybe two or three times a year where I have to ask someone to please hurry up. So mm-hmm. it's just great. And that we have the power of that choice. That is just like we get to restructure our thinking. We really, I think so many of us would benefit from really looking at our lives and seeing, how do I really want to structure my life? This is not going to look conventional, because conventional thought is really dumb. So that's the thing that's dumb and like vampires. So, yeah.
Exactly. You're totally right. And that's the thing, is it's not, it's the we live in an unbiological, unnatural society, like the rushing and the pressure and the separation. I gotta go. I gotta be gone. You know, it's like, no, that like, that's not best for raising children, strong, calm, confident, connected children. You know, if they're constantly rushed, if they're constantly being behind, you might, I don't know if you've come across the video where Steve's talking about how he was vacuum extracted. He's like, I've been being rushed and, you know, hurried through life my whole life, like since the very beginning. And he sensed that there's something very wrong here. Like I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. You know, it's like I was little and I, you know, your daughter, she wasn't ready to be on her own throughout the night. She needed something. And so by recognizing and not, you know, feeling bad, like you said, it's like, we don't want to go into self-devaluation and guilt and, oh, I should have. And what? No, we just accept that we were there and that made sense at the time, but now something else makes sense and we can pivot. And I just think it's beautiful that you've changed your life in such a way where you can offer your children this slow, stable, connected, very natural way of living and learning and growing together as a family. I really admire that. And I think it's beautiful and such a wonderful, because like you said, anyone can do it. Like you really can get, extract yourself from the rat race, you know, like change your number. No one can consult with you anymore. Like I'm doing life different now. And I just think that that's very inspirational. And I think we can all find ways to just start moving in that direction. And I think that the tide is turning and more people are very interested because we've seen the damage and how much the rat race school system life just doesn't work to create healthy kids, healthy families. You know, people are more broken and sick than ever before. And so we have to go back to birth and child rearing and what those early life, you know, life experiences are like that, you know, your third grade experience, you know, that you should never have really gone through that because in nature, you know, when can you, you know, not look and not ask for help. And it's like, that's very unnatural, you know, but that set you up for, you know, a lifetime of, you know, this, ooh, am I smart enough? Oh, am I doing the, you know, is there something wrong with me? I can't answer the question. I can't look. It's like, oh, it's just so, you know, it's so precious when we see it in the context and then we can do something different. So, thank you so much. I just think that you are
Thank you, Melissa.
A wonderful role model. And I just say, look forward to hearing more stories from you and staying connected with you. And I just appreciate that you reaching out and being willing to share your stories with everyone.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you learned a lot from that episode and that your wheels are turning and dots are starting to connect in your mind about how this five biological law, German New Medicine thing works in practice in your real life. So if you're interested in diving deeper, learning more in the show notes, I've connected some links to courses that I've got going on, other courses, tutorials, so you can dive deeper into this incredible wisdom. So thank you for listening, and I will see you again next time.